During his Citizen in the Republic speech, Theodore Roosevelt famously said, "The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly. Educators, perhaps as much as nearly any other profession in our world, embody the idea of being in the arena. On this podcast, Monticello School District Superintendent Eric Olson delves into the arena of education and the challenges, errors, and ultimately triumphs that are faced every day, both in Monticello School District and around the United States. This is In the Arena with Superintendent Eric Olson.
On this episode of In the Arena, we have the opportunity to talk with Director of Teaching and Learning, Cindy Fosching, and Lindsay Rettman, the Literacy Specialist for the Monticello School District, on the topic of literacy. On the show this time, the discussion circles around the READ Act legislation and where we are in those requirements, the shifts in structured literacy, and how hard teachers are working this year to make this all happen. Finally, we discussed how there are new Minnesota language arts standards being implemented and how this impacts the way we do our assessments and reports. This is episode 1 of In the Arena with Superintendent Eric Olson on the topic of literacy.
Well, thanks for that introduction, Gavin. It sure is awesome to sit here with two experts. As superintendent of Monticello Public Schools, one of the things that I'm very happy about is to bring back a podcast. This podcast is really dedicated to the educational profession. Our education profession is at a place in history where I think it's all hands on deck. It's coming together. It's unification, collective advocacy. And I think that's what this podcast truly resembles. And I'm here today with two amazing experts in literacy. And they both come by that title, I think, a little different. And so I'm going to introduce my guests, Cindy Fosching. She is the Director of Teaching and Learning in Monticello, Minnesota, District 882. And we also have our literacy district specialist, Lindsay Rettman, with us here today. Let's just start with Cindy and share a little bit about your educational background. Who are you?
Oh, wow. You didn't have that one on the script, Eric. So who am I? This is my 34th year in education. I spent my first 26 years in Catholic education, and now I'm in my ninth year here at Monticello Public Education. So I've got background that comes from a math teacher, secondary math teacher, then a high school assistant principal for 11 years. Then I went to an alternative learning school and worked with high school students who needed extra love and support. And then I worked my way into this position so that I can help lead the district.
You are just hearing your journey just makes me excited to think about all the different experiences you've had. Some of those are similar with me. I've been in alternative education a time or two in my life. And no matter what we're doing in education, it's always great to have that that eye for the underdog or the underserved or the person who needs that extra love and support.
Yep. And there aren't enough people who are passionate about that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we need to introduce our other expert, and I call them experts, and they're frowning at me when I say that. They're shaking their heads. They don't like that term, but I learned so much from these two wonderful leaders. Let's hear a little bit from Lindsay. Lindsay, who are you, and where has your educational journey brought you?
Sure. I'm our district literacy lead, and this is my fourth year in the Monticello district. And prior to that, I was in international schools overseas and in some Minneapolis-St. Paul area school districts as an elementary teacher and an EL teacher. And I would say that I'm not an expert. I'm just a very enthusiastic learner and taking in as much information as I can about education in general and particularly literacy. I would say that kind of the vision that I have of myself is of a kindergarten teacher. Like when I think of myself as an educator, that's what I think of mostly. I spent a lot of years in kindergarten and it's where I felt the most effective and found a lot of joy. And it's really exciting to be part of a kid's first year of like school when we're setting the stage for what their experience is going to be like in their K-12 years.
Lizzie, I heard you say international experience. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Sure. I was in a few international schools in Russia and in Malaysia. And those are schools that are U.S. embassy assisted schools. So children there are from their parents either work at the embassies or consulates or multinational corporations, or they are local business owners who attend those schools.
Well, you're going to need to keep me on track because I do want to come back to that after we dive a little bit into our whys. Can you kick it back to Cindy just as we dive into this podcast today? Share your why for literacy. We talk about our why in education. Today, let's really zone in on our topic and literacy. So why is literacy so important?
I see direct relationship between the work we do with literacy and the work we do with equity. And this summer I got to attend a conference at the University of Minnesota where Kareem Weaver was one of the keynote speakers, and anyone who's seen the Right to Read documentary will know who he is. But his message was very clear in that until we have Black and brown children and children from low SES backgrounds reading at the same level as their white middle class peers, we do not have equity. And so that's, I'd say, my biggest driver. The other is that literacy is what gets us to everything else that we want for kids at school. We want kids to have opportunities to do self-directed learning, to create, to inquire. And in order for them to do that, they have to have automaticity with foundational skills. And just on a more like tangible everyday level, I think that literacy, there's definitely a relationship between low literacy and behavior challenges, and a relationship between high literacy skills and motivation for learning. And having, it's not fun to be at school if everything feels like it's not accessible to you. And so for kids, in order to reach that point where there's joy in their learning, they have to be able to do the reading and writing.
I swear you just unpacked the next 12 sessions that we're going to have to dive into with literacy, which is just so true. And I remember when we first started talking about this topic, you both looked at the schedule of events for this podcast in the arena and you said, oh, literacy, I see you have for one session. That invitation may need to be extended. And that is definitely what we'll do. This is going to be a two-part session to start out the year of our podcast season. But we're going to circle back to literacy throughout our existence of this podcast. Just as you could see, when Lindsay starts talking there's so much to unpack when it comes to literacy and what it really means in our society. But Cindy, let's just connect to you a little bit. And you talked a little bit about the learner in your introduction, and I'm excited to see where you're going to go. And as you explain your why literacy, because you're a math teacher.
I'm a math teacher. I'm a math geek altogether. And maybe in my past life, I used to say math is the most important thing for all students, but not at all. I don't believe that at all. Literacy is the most important thing. In fact, I could go as far as even saying reading, number one. But reading, speaking, listening, writing, all of it together, put together, is the most important thing we can do for kids. If we could redesign our school day and just make it all that, and nothing else, we would be successful, because that's the most important thing people need. My why really comes from a lot of times I come back to this, but it's my grandson, John. My grandson, John, just graduated from high school, but I've watched John go through from pre-K all the way through high school with struggles because John is a special ed student or was a special ed student. He had a traumatic birth, so oxygen deprived. So that left him with some disabilities in reading and speech, especially. And so he struggled all his life in school and had multiple tutors and lots of special education help and lots of speech help. But he ended up with very few friends, with very little success in school, low self-esteem because, you know, when teachers would have him read aloud, it would be embarrassing. He would get teased. John is what we call a gentle giant, so you can't help but love John, so no one can understand why anyone would pick on John. I watched how kids in special education, which is really the same as kids who are English language learners, kids who struggle in school, low achievers, our ALP kids, all of those kids have those same experiences. And we really, it's our job as in schools to do something about that for those kids. We've talked about this many times. There's a good population of students who are going to learn in spite of us. But there's a big chunk who really, really, really need our attention. And those are the ones that I really want to help serve. I was thinking about this the other day, and I thought, as a math teacher, I used to always get this question. When are we ever going to learn use this stuff? When are we ever going to use this? Does anyone ever ask that of a teacher of reading? No, never. No one ever questions that. So that feels like the most important component to me.
Yeah, almost as same as Lindsay did in her introduction. You guys unpacked a lot of things there. Your heart for your grandson, your heart for your for kids in general, and you both call out a lot of kind of identifiers of students. And I think that's really important is to talk about students in special education, talk about students who are underserved. And you've done that in a way that really gets my brain thinking of our soul gun here in Monticello, of every kid every day. And what does that truly mean? And I ask that of myself every day. And I hope educators across the world ask themselves that, but obviously I can only guide Monticello, and so you know, as we talk today, I'm going to keep thinking about that every kid every day slogan, in hopes that as we unpack literacy through discussion today, I hope that all of our educators and anybody that listening to this podcast really understands every kid every day means something different for every kid every day. Anything else to say about that introduction? I know we have several questions that we're going to dive in today, but feel free, Lindsay, Cindy, either one of you have anything else to say about how we started the session so far?
Well, one other thing I was thinking about is how often have you gone a whole day without doing mathematics? Pretty often, right? Or without doing science or using social studies or... Have you ever gone a day without reading? Every person's day has to have that. So if we don't use that as the foundation of everything we do, like I said, I'm a math geek, but boy, if people can't read the problems, they can't problem solve. So that has to come first. K through 12, all the way.
I feel like a bobblehead right now because you have me like, so I'm just nodding emphatically that absolutely, you're so right. Lindsay, anything else?
No, just you brought up the motto of every kid every day. And I think about that a lot too. And I think about how many years in education, I'm 21 years of being an educator, mostly a teacher. But I think I really had an idea at the beginning that not all kids would be able to read, that was just a natural scenario that we were just going to have to accept in education. And the more I'm learning and the more I'm experiencing, the more I'm seeing with my own eyes happening when we really are providing kids with what they need, it truly is every kid every day. We are getting to kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exciting.
I'm going to just change gears a little bit. Literacy is a hot topic. It's a hot topic because there's been a lot of language and legislation. I think you two, in knowing the history of literacy, you'll probably dive back farther than me when we talk about this. But let's just talk a little bit about literacy. You both declared it's so important. What has been some historical perspectives of literacy, and why have there what I've heard is like reading wars, and I know there's a podcast out there that we've had all our school district teachers listen to, Sold a Story, but people are trying to find that answer, and as we search for that answer to be the equalizer for kids and to help them read, let's talk a little bit about historical perspective. And I know that as we prepared for this podcast today, that we I know Cindy really wants to touch base on some of the READ Act here in Minnesota, but let's dive back a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about history. Why is there such a reading war going on, and why has it been going on for so many decades?
When we think about those reading wars, we're talking about what was happening in the 1980s, and what was happening, particularly California, was a big conversation. The conversation was really centered there, and the idea that the whole state, in terms of their legislation, was advocating for whole language. And whole language, the concept was that came out of the 70s mostly, was this idea that students would, just like speaking, learning to speak is natural, learning to read is natural. And that if we surround children with good books and we motivate them and we make reading an exciting thing to do, they will naturally learn to do it and they will take to it. And that all of that figuring out what the letters and sounds are will come from just experience of eyes on print. And that was highly problematic when states went all in on it. And then when a state goes all in on it, publishers go all in on it. And at that point, we really didn't have access to a lot of knowledge. Educators didn't, you know, the way that I feel like we are getting amazing access to now. But publishers really pushed us in different directions. And then it also became political. You know, it became a left and right. In general, the left was very much advocating for whole language, and the right was very much advocating for a phonics-based approach. And then that was a very problematic aspect of it. And it spread throughout the United States. And I was very fortunate. I was a kindergartner in 1984, and our school district did not go to a whole language program until I was in sixth grade. And I could remember it. I could remember us all being very thrown by what we were given to do at that point. And my mom was a fourth grade teacher during those years. And she said you could just tell as the school district made that transition, every year she got kids who had fewer years of phonics, and she could just tell that they had had that, and fewer of them were able to be proficient readers and spellers as they were coming to fourth grade. So that's recent. It also sits within this bigger sort of discussion that's existed since like Rousseau wrote the Emile about a child being needing to find their own path and needing to learn on their own instead of us teaching them, instead of us giving them direct instruction. And so there's this bigger conversation about how we educate children that this sits within. And so, you know, it feels very compelling, this idea that the child will just naturally develop if we surround them with what they need to, you know, nourishing literature and nourishing experiences. However, for most kids, that we're not in a situation where we're one-to-one, you know, where we can do that and just guide each child as they're developing. We have many of them in front of us, and in general, direct instruction and explicit instruction in phonics is the way that we can impact the highest number of students best.
It's good for all, not just some.
When you talk about phonics and direct instruction, could I summarize that real quickly and say a couple words that we're hearing right now, the science of reading, would that be considered part of, or is that the science of reading?
The idea of the terminology, like the term science of reading, really is describing the body of knowledge that has existed for a very long time in many countries, in many languages, about how children best learn to read. And we know the science of reading, there's a lot more science out there. There's a lot more knowledge about how the brain learns to read. And from that has been coming how to teach them to read and that evidence base for how to go about doing that. There's a strong evidence base for some aspects of literacy instruction. And for some, there's a strong research base for how they learn. And we're still, there's a lot of figuring that out. And that's also what that science of reading is that movement of, we're going to figure things out. And when we know more, we are going to adapt to that. It's not about just picking a way that we like to teach children to read or believe is working. It's going to be about what is the evidence saying is working.
Lindsay, can you talk just a little bit about the move from whole language then to balanced literacy and what happened with all of that?
Sure. So that was, I believe, in the late 90s, the Clinton administration had I don't know what we call it, like requested that there be a study, and they brought together a panel of experts to kind of make a final decision on this, because those reading wars had gone back and forth for a very long time. And overwhelmingly, it came out that children needed to have explicit instruction in phonics. They needed to have all of the parts in order to be able to read. We can't be skipping around, and it's not going to work for the highest number of children to just be reading in that whole language way. And so there still were a camp of professors, like whole universities or professors or publishers would really be bought in, and they wanted to keep going with their whole language kind of mission, I would say. They added some phonics in and call it balanced literacy.
That's awesome. And I, when you're talking, I get both excited and a little sad at the same time, because I'm an elementary teacher and always will be at heart, just like you said. And I didn't learn phonics at all in the college that I went to as preparation. And so when I got my first elementary teaching position, I was a third grade teacher. And I did not know how to teach the science of reading. Everything was the whole language, balanced literacy approach. And so I remember, obviously, third grade is a pivotal year. And third grade, you're really expecting children to know how to read and be able to consume that knowledge on print. And I remember when students would have trouble with a word, I didn't have the skills to help them with that word. So I remember saying things like, look at the pictures. What word does it look like? I remember students not looking at the word itself. And in fact, I can just still picture what feels like hundreds of students looking up into the sky, rolling their eyes back and trying to come up with the word somewhere out of air.
Well, and that you were a third grade teacher doing that. I was a kindergarten teacher doing that. I was doing the same thing. In the schools I was in, we were deep into reading and writing workshop. And there's something very appealing about that approach. However, it was not providing me as a teacher with the tools that I needed to help children learn to read, nor did I have that in my teacher training.
Well, it sure is awesome for me to be able to reflect back and think about my years as both an eighth grade and third grade teacher. I know that through my time working with you two, when we're doing planning for an admin meeting or planning for some PD that you'll be doing with your teachers, you always tell me not to be so hard on myself. And while that's easier said than done, I do want to just pause here and just make a reference that, yeah, I guess I don't need to be so hard on myself. And here in Monticello, we have to be proud of the things that we have been doing and then transition to what we are doing in the future and be good with that journey. For years, we've been teaching kids to read here in Monticello, just like districts across the state and nation and world. But we are going through a change. We're going through a transition. And I would like to talk a little bit about that transition here today and talk about, the not only the transition in our state, but also just look at where are we here in Monticello. So let's start by looking at the READ Act. And I'm going to kick that one over to Cindy. Give us a brief overview of the READ Act, and let's find out where we are here in comparison to that legislation.
Sure. So the READ Act replaces the Read Well by Third Grade legislation that we've had here in Minnesota. And the READ Act is an acronym. READ is an acronym for Reading to Ensure Academic Development. And so what's different about the READ Act is a little bit of the verbiage that I'll just read. It says, the goal of this legislation is to have every Minnesota child reading at or above grade level every year beginning in kindergarten, and to support multilingual learner and students receiving special education services in achieving their individualized reading goals. What's different about that is the verbiage that says at or above grade level every year. The original Read Well by Third Grade said that we wanted by the end of third grade students to be reading at grade level. That meant if they were behind in kindergarten or first grade or second grade, hopefully they caught up by third grade, and by the end of third grade, they'd read well. Now we're called to have students read at grade level every year beginning in kindergarten. And that's a really important and key component, and it's a big lift for schools, and it's a big change. Monticello started this actually long before the READ Act. We started to implement changes that we could make to make sure, and we recognize that kindergarten is our most important year of school. And so we've been putting a lot of time and energy into kindergarten and as well as the other grades to begin that journey. And so some of the things in the READ Act say every child must be reading at or above grade level. So we're working on that. It also says districts must provide evidence-based reading instruction based on structured literacy. We began 2 years ago looking for curriculum that we could use in our district that does just that. And so we've been doing training. We did a lot of research. We did a lot of work with MDE. We did a lot of work with CARI, the Center for Applied Research in Education. And we narrowed it down and purchased a structured literacy curriculum and an evidence-based foundational curriculum that we are implementing this year. So the READ Act calls us to do that by 26-27. We started that this year. Actually, we began a couple of years ago with piloting and implementing some of those foundational skills. So we feel very ahead of the game there. And we're glad the legislation came along that says, that shows what we've been doing. So it also says that people who are responsible for teaching reading must receive extended training in structured literacy using one of the different skills MDE has approved. We began that also 2 years ago. We have about 36 teachers who participated 2 years ago and finished that training. We have another 36 to 40 that are implementing it right now or are in the midst of training. So feel good about that too. They strongly encourage in the READ Act for schools to participate or to have an MTSS framework. We started that 2 years ago already and are highly embedded in creating our own Monticello MTSS framework. So we check that box as well. We are also called to give our students a screener twice a year for reading in grades K through 3. We've been doing that for a long time, and we don't do K through 3. We do K through 8. We do it 3 times a year, not twice a year. So, yeah, I feel really good about where we're at with identifying students with reading difficulties. So those are some of the key components of the READ Act that we feel like we've already embedded. And so we're ahead of the game there, and we get to continue our good work.
Anything to add, Lindsay, as you look at what's going on here in Monticello, or as you hear about the READ Act through Cindy's lens, maybe we could not only dive into what we are doing here in Monticello, but also what specific evidence you have heard or seen from our teachers in the work that they're doing in the trenches.
Sure. We're building this on a foundation that has existed. Like you mentioned, we have been teaching students to read. And right now, the work that we're doing and the purpose of the READ Act is to really take it from having many kids reading to all kids reading. And in order for that to happen, it really means that we've had to double down on a lot of what we've been doing. But increasing kind of the rigor of it, not just for students, but for us as educators too. So a big part has been the professional learning. And that's not just teachers that are doing that, but we have administrators that are doing that as well. And that's been big. That's been, a lot of people have come through that and said, wow, I wish, you know, I really wish I would have known this earlier. One teacher, in fact, said, I was going to retire next year, but now that I know all this, I don't even feel like I can retire. Because there is that feeling as a teacher of like, finally, I have some tools to go forward and to be helping students to achieve these things. That's one of the things I would say about the READ Act is that I would be more afraid of that, like where it's saying we'll have all kids reading at grade level at all of these years or all the requirements. I would be more intimidated by it if we didn't have this toolkit that is also being provided.
I think there are some other teacher highlights that we wanted to get to as well. So Lindsay, you just had the biggest smile on your face when you talked about that teacher who can't retire because they're so excited what they're learning.
We don't want her to. I don't want her to.
Exactly. I think I know who you're talking about as we're on a district advisory curriculum committee with her. So Cindy, what else have you been hearing?
Wow. So the curriculum that we decided to move to, we actually have two pieces to it. The foundational skills curriculum is very, very explicit in the instruction, in the lesson plan design. Teachers are talking about how easy it is to implement because it is so outlined. There's a lot to it, and they can see kids really making huge gains with the way that it's structured. We also have the second piece of it is our knowledge building comprehension curriculum. Teachers and students alike are talking about, oh my gosh, what we're learning that we never knew. Even teachers are saying, wow, I know more about ancient Greece than I ever knew in my life, and I'm teaching this to my third graders. Parents are saying their kids are excited to come home and talk about what they're doing in school. It's like really, really exciting to hear about that. We even have some of our teachers who maybe this curriculum was not their first choice. Now they're saying, oh my gosh, this wasn't my first choice. But now this is just amazing. The kids can learn these things. I didn't think they could learn these things. So for example, they're studying ancient Greece. And do you want to tell the story about
sure,
that?
Sure. No, in second grade, they're studying ancient Greek civilization. Sure. And I have a colleague whose daughter is in second grade. And all of a sudden, she's noticing everything else with the word Greece or Greek in it. And she's making a lot of connections to it. And that's how knowledge works is that, you know a little bit and then you start to see these things that were around you before that you didn't even notice. And just the amount of communicating about this that's happening outside of school and just the references that kids are making to each other. So at one point, I think they were out trick or treating for Halloween and one took off running and they said, you're running as fast as who ran the marathon? Pheidippides? they're just dropping these references to Greek civilization, which is wild, you know, that these second graders, and they all know exactly what the other one's talking about, and then they all laugh, and then it's a really cool thing to see. That's one part that's happening is this knowledge building, but within that is the work that they're doing in reading comprehension. So the work that they're doing with teachers helping students to be able to get what the main idea of that story was and what are the details that support it, understanding cause and effect, understanding sequencing these events and finding themes. All of that is happening in the work that they're doing with these texts. But from the kids' point of view, and it is what we want. We want kids to be reading and to be getting something out of it that teaches them about the world, either the natural world in science or social world in social studies, or about the human experience in literature. But the kids really see it as we are learning about this. And that's something to talk about. That is this body of knowledge to be building together and to be finding out more about.
Once again, I catch myself reflecting back to when I was teaching, and when I hear the excitement in your voices as you talk about our teachers and what they're doing, it sounds like the curriculum piece of it is it's really been beefed up as part of the nonfiction readings go, and that for me is really big because you're talking about ancient civilization, American history is a big part of it. I heard the life cycles in in biology and science. I'm hearing so many of these nonfiction approaches and stories to the literature in our current curriculum that it gets me excited, because that is one piece that, like, as an adult, that I struggle with. Like, if I go pick something up at Home Depot, I don't read a lot of nonfiction. I'm going to be honest. Like, I like fiction. That's what I always had been, was part of my curriculum as a young lad. And then as a teacher, those were almost all of our stories, very few nonfiction pieces. And so when I do read technically, I know that that's more of a challenge for me. So it's great to see that our students are building knowledge. I can just see them on the streets of a bigger city being stopped by a camera crew someday, and our kids are going to be way smarter than every other fifth grader, like that one show, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader or Third Grader? And our kids are going to shine no matter what they're doing in life. So that excites me, not just for that being stopped on the side of the road, but just because they're going to be able to read both fiction and nonfiction.
And just think potentially what that does for them. The knowledge is important on its own for science and social studies. They have a lot more years ahead of them in secondary education and beyond to be learning about this. And so it serves the reading, you know, to have that broad knowledge base, but it also is important on its own to have these sort of generalized timelines in your mind of events that have happened, and to be able to understand what's happening currently in the world. It's really important to know these things.
Yeah, and the focus on the vocabulary that they are learning that they would have not otherwise learned is so important. And, you know, at our meeting the other night, there was one parent who said, "Oh my gosh, there's so much writing in this curriculum. What's going on? Why are our students doing so much writing?" Yep, there's a lot of writing in this curriculum. And, you know, we're gonna see a difference in our students' writing once they come to high school due to that. And so I'm excited to see what happens.
Can I share another teacher story that had happened? Another teacher had said after this first unit that she had never had a class of students read that well. And this is not a new teacher. She's been there for many years. But she's never had a class of students write that well. But she also knows she hasn't taught it as well as she did this time around. And so people are seeing the impact that their teaching has on student outcomes. And that's really exciting. And I think it comes back again to not having that set of tools before. If you didn't have that set of tools before, it just felt like the kids weren't going to be able to do that. And now we're seeing that when we have it, we can provide that for them.
Well, I think, you know what, I want to transition here, but it's only slightly. You were talking about vocabulary, explicit instruction, and we have, Lindsay and I are both elementary at heart. That's where our training is. But that's not the only place that we're trying to make gains in our reading for our students. We're also, you know, diving into our secondary work. I was in a ninth grade science class yesterday, and I got to see students doing writing at the beginning. I got to see students learning vocabulary. I got to see a great instructional exemplary lesson of students moving, collaborating, having some independent think time, playing a game, being challenged. And but I could feel that vocabulary throughout the lesson. I could feel the teaching. I could feel the explicit instruction. It felt high schoolish, but it also felt like I was in my own elements of being an elementary teacher, because it was so hands-on. What else are we doing at the secondary levels to help our teachers?
Sure. We actually had four middle school teachers for whom this was completely optional a few years ago take part in the same letters training that was we were asking elementary teachers to do, but they volunteered to do it, which was really fantastic. And so last year, those four middle school teachers and I provided professional learning for the rest of their colleagues on explicit vocabulary instruction. And then this year, we've continued that into just increasing the academic language opportunities with within classes. And this isn't something that can just happen in language arts class. It really has to spread throughout the day. It has to be something that's happening in every class that kids go to. And it is possible to do that. It's really about kids reading, writing, and speaking in class every day, which seems obvious. And it seems like to some extent it is already happening, but it's about making sure that every kid is doing the speaking, every kid is reading, every kid is writing, and that we're continually kind of nudging them to be using more complex sentences and more advanced vocabulary. And it does take scaffolding to do that. And I think that might be like what you were feeling a little bit more at home, some of the elementary things, some of the things that we've often thought of that were just for elementary students can be used in a secondary setting that are providing that scaffolding that allows students, all students, to be able to read, write, and speak every day and to be learning and to be growing not just their content knowledge in any area, but their literacy skills too.
Well, as we move forward, I have heard you talk a little bit about our parents. And so what else have we been hearing from parents, maybe as some closure to our segment here today? And then what do we need to do here in Monticello as we move forward?
Well, one of the things that I can talk about as far as what do we need to do is I think we need to provide parents more support and more strategies that they can use at home at this point. That is part of the READ Act, parent notification. So we are doing, you know, significant parent notification when we do a screener or we do progress monitoring or grading. But we also want to provide them with services or strategies that they can use at home to help their students with reading. And so that's on our bucket list of things that we want to be working on. Some of the other things we need to work on is we need to push into our earlier childhood programs. So we need to push this down to pre-K.
And the READ Act is going to require that. That's not just a Monticello thing, but that's going to be required.
The READ Act is going to require pre-K teachers to do the same training that the rest of the teachers are doing. And so we're going to see some reading instruction begin in pre-K, which is really exciting. So we'll be partnering with our pre-K programs to do that.
Well, I mean, there's exciting things. We just are coming off of conferences. And so teachers were sharing, you know, comments parents were making. And some were similar to what I'd shared earlier about their coming home and sharing what it is that they've been learning. We also are seeing that there's a communications piece that we need to work on in terms of families understanding, you know, what it is that students are being asked to do. And when we are assessing them and then reporting on it, what does that mean? And what's the success criteria? What does it look like to be doing well? To some extent, we all have an idea of that, but we definitely need to be clearer on it. And so there have been questions about that, and they're really good questions that are coming up. And I think it's really showing that there is that need for family engagement. So not just in informing parents, but we need to work on this together. We need to be talking about how it is that we're communicating student success. We need to form those kinds of communication channels together with families. We need to know how it is that they want to be hearing this about this and what and kind of how much, you know, because there can be so much information coming at families that they don't quite know what to do with it, or sometimes there's too little. And so it's really about finding kind of that just right area for communications, but forming that together.
Right. So family engagement is one of our top priorities this year. We're really working hard on that. And I do want to find a way to consult with our families and find out what is it that they need from us as far as being able to support their children. So that'll be our next step, is to really reach out to all of our families and get feedback on what do you need from us as a school, so we can provide that, especially in the area of literacy instruction and instruction overall.
It's awesome. I can see you working on that with our admin. I can, you know, see you working on that with advisory councils. And now to know that we're going to be reaching out to all of our families, so it's not just a select few, and really developing that relationship deeper, doing exactly what we do with kids. And that's trying to meet people where they're at. What do they need? And that's so important, because that's really what I think is a key ingredient to the a highly successful school system, is to meet kids where they are at and to meet families where they are at with their needs. Every family's different. Every child's different.
Yep. And remove the barriers that exist. So we'll find out what those are and what their needs are and move forward.
Well, it definitely looks like we've only scratched the surface here today, but we've scratched a surface that I think we're all very proud of and passionate about. I think we are all very proud of our teachers and all of the reading coaches and administration, families, students, everybody who is working so hard to do one of the greatest things that we can do for kids, and that's teach them how to read. With that, I'm about all out of my notes that I was hoping to talk about, but any closing thoughts from our two resident experts?
I was hoping you were going to ask that, because I have one more thing I wanted to say. I want to throw out a huge shout out to our teachers and our, you know, all of our staff that have worked so hard on implementing. This has been a huge, huge, heavy lift. And we not only threw new curriculum for foundational skills, new curriculum for our knowledge building comprehension curriculum. We also threw in a new schedule where there's extended time and minutes for reading. We also threw in flexible grouping, where we're moving kids to groups to get what they need for foundational skills. And on top of that, we said, oh, and by the way, we have new technology we want you to use to do that so that you can move around in the room and be mobile. And they've got all those new things that they're learning. And there was a lot of apprehension and fear that we'd be able to do all of this at one time, but they've jumped in and they've done it. And now they're all just glowing about how much they can do. So I just, huge shout out and thank you to them for all their hard work, and to Lindsay for leading this entire process.
No, this is definitely a group effort. It's not possible for one person to do it on their own. And I agree. It's been a heavy lift, and people have done it. Like, when you stop and think about it, like, we jumped in and we did it, and that's pretty incredible.
Well, I know that all you podcasters out there, you probably have heard of Jason and Travis Kelce having a very famous podcast. But hey, I got to sit here with Lindsay Ratman and Cindy Foshing today. So if this gets tagged on the Kelce podcast, boy, would I be just, let's see what you got out there, boys. But thanks for being here today. I'm so excited to learn from both of you always. With that being said, I'll kick it out to Gavin to close us up.
On the show next time, we'll be starting a new segment on this podcast called Alumni Spotlight, where we will bring back past alumni to talk about what they're doing in their current career fields and what impacts they are making in their communities. That is next time on In the Arena with Superintendent Eric Olson.